Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Hello and welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to continue our dive into the Drukhari with a focus a bit more on the structure and some of their methodology.
That's a nice word for that.
Methodology? Yeah. As always, please like and comment in the cast. The comments are both hilarious but also helpful to us. It's a great way because by you commenting, it really does expand our reach to more listeners and grows us organically. Also, for those of you who are looking for a more active engagement around 40K universe, we have a Discord. If you go to the about on the show, you can click a link there. They'll take you to our completely free Discord. Again, there's people out there who charge for Discords, and shame on those people.
Which just had a wildly successful painting event.
There was a wildly successful painting event. At either last week or, depending on when you're listening to this, 3 years ago. It's the internet. Stuff's there for a while. But anyway, so our Discord link is there. If you are looking to interact around all things 40K, it's a really fun, healthy, and supportive community. Big thanks to Kevin and the new mods who've actually taken over this and really organized the Discord out.
Made it way more useful than we did.
It's functional now. Yeah.
But the best part about it is there's a place. I really think there's a place for everybody on this because we've got everything from fiction, video games, memes. It's everything. Just there's something that if you love this type of content, there's something for you in there.
Yeah, and it's built in a way to make it really friendly to people who are newer to the hobby and people who've been there for a while, because it's designed, the goal behind the Discord is to uplift. Actually, everything we do is about uplifting. We want someone to come in who's been playing the game for a while. We hope that our cast is entertaining for you and you learn something new. People who are new to it, that's what our cast is about. That's what the Discord is for. Hey, I've always thought 40K was interesting. I want to know more about playing it. Come on in. Hey, I like reading about this. Come on in. Or I own every book Black Library has ever made and I want to talk about them.
Also come in.
Also a spot for you. So for anyone who's looking to interact, it's there. Also, it's a great way to give us feedback. As I've said before, I mispronounce retinue, apparently, because people explained that to me, and that was way off on there. It's the best place to tell us that we got stuff wrong or ask us for some new stuff. We have some casts coming up in the near future who are going to be completely listener-driven. So
we've already had them.
Oh, exactly. So the Space Marine one? That was a hit. So anyway, for that, come on in. We couldn't like you guys more. Additionally, in the show notes, there's also a link to our Patreon. This is something we put together for people to help us out and kind of continue to upgrade equipment. I realize we need to get something for these tables, so every time Brad and I pick our drink up or put it down, you don't have to hear it. That's what we use the Patreon for. It helps us get more equipment to improve the audio. Brad just very sheepishly picked up his Dr. Pepper as I said that.
Yep. I'm trying to put it down gently.
It's very funny.
Daintily as possible.
It's enjoyable. So this is the thing that we use a Patreon for. So for those of you who've contributed, thank you. As you can hear, the audio's gotten a lot better. For those of you who want to help us out, it's a great way to help us out. And it'll improve the quality of the cast. That's the goal. Lastly, though, we have a website. And the website is called the40klorecast.com. It's got links to everything I just mentioned, along with merchandise that's on Etsy. There's also a link to that in the show notes. At the time of this publication, it may actually not be live on the website, but I'm working on it. More importantly, though, there's a page there dedicated to Brad's coaching services. After almost 30 years of playing the game and coaching it for close to 10, Brad's a pretty good coach of the game.
I do stuff.
Yeah.
I just did stuff before I came here.
Exactly. This is what Brad does. He coaches people in 40K. It's a really nice resource for anyone who is playing the game and wants to play at a higher level, from all the way from complete brand new noob all the way up to like tournament preparation. He's got all that stuff because he knows it well. And I really do, aside from being like a shill to pitch him, which is not what this is, I've known Brad for a long time. He really does want more people good at the game because that's more people enjoying the game, which means the game itself is improving. So you can reach him by going to our website and clicking on the link, going to our Discord and clicking on the link, or emailing him at
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Just so you all know, we took it out because Brad wanted us to take it out, and everyone made us put it back in. And the only reason I put it back in is Brad gets so much spam email.
Oh, my God. It's insane.
Because when you say, even if you just say your email address out loud in a podcast, there's enough digitization up there that now every spam bot on the planet is aware of his email address.
Also, if I haven't gotten to you and you emailed me, send something again, because there's a lot of times they don't get through. I can't figure out how to set my spam up enough to combat the wave, the hordes of invaders that are coming at me.
We may just have to change your email address on the Discord and the website to one that's more functional. And this one can be your... am I the only one who has a separate email address for when I have to go to like weird websites and put in my information? Like I have a spam email.
My email with the number 2.
Yeah, I've got an entire spam email. That's what you need. Anyway.
Back to Jukari.
So as we said last time, Vect has now effectively conquered Kamara. And now he's got to rule it. And I'm a huge fan of Jukari. The Jukari lore, they're horrible, horrible, horrible creatures, but the lore is exceptional.
Also, there's no way that we're not going to start this by saying it's Vex new groove.
Oh, I was going to totally skip that. good God. Anyway. So Vect decides to remake Kamara in the way that he thinks it should function. And
let's back it up, though. Mm-hmm. Vect, it's not like Vect just won the election. Vect just did the Godfather.
Oh, he just slaughtered everybody. Yeah. He's in charge.
Yeah. But my point is he just went, hey, how are you guys normally keeping power? I murdered everyone. Yeah. This is a all at the same time coordinated effort, you know. Thing. Yeah. He's not just walking in and like, hey, transfer of power. No, like everyone's dead that was in charge of things.
What Vect wanted to do, though, is he wanted to build something similar to the old version, but different. There's I kickbox for a long, I did Muay Thai for a long time, and the Thais have this great phrase called same, same, but different. I love it. It's their very polite way of saying your punch is wrong. Oh, yeah. Same, same, but different. But anyway.
But not wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what Vect came in here with. So the prior noble houses, they kept their power really just by a threat of violence. Because you could oppose one or more of them, but you don't have to fight them. And these guys had so much wealth and they were so large that it was a battle you'd inevitably lose. Even if you took one of them out, the other houses would come in and just wreck you. So now that Vect is the only leader, he can't rely on the fact that if someone wants to attack him, someone else would come in and get him. He has to completely hold the power himself. And he does this in a way that basically the best way to describe it is pirate lord or pirate king. He's going to make sure that all of the subjects below him, no one of size actually wants to kill him or undermine him because things are better. So in this way, Vec's a good person.
Well, he also reorganized in such a different way because he wants everybody to get what they want. But also he wants to punish anybody that stops that, but he wants people to know that. So he makes sure that like, hey, this person crossed me. And because John crossed me, you now don't get what you wanted.
Yep.
I'm not saying you should do something to John. I'm just saying that, well, he stopped you from getting this. And he does. And he cross plays everybody.
It's incredibly hard to rise to power without Vex blessing because of this. Because if you work against him, to Brad's point, he may kill you, but more likely he's going to influence others to kill you. But what Vex did really cleverly here, though, was he realized that Kamara had has an endless thirst for power. And he had to figure out a way to create so much resource that power, that thirst could be
well, his places quenched. To go.
Yeah, it could be, well, it could also be quenched.
Yeah.
So the first thing he does is a massive expansion of Kamara. So Kamara it's a city, but it's also a universe in and of itself. It's spread throughout webways. And so as you go through Kamara, you know, you'll like come around a corner and walk through an archway and you're going to teleport in an instant 1,000 light years. So we don't really know how this actually functions.
I do have to give the again. I want everybody to know that, as usual, when I agree with something John says, I usually give him a nod.
Yeah.
That you have absolutely no idea that I'm doing, but I've never stopped and I'm never going to stop. Continue, my friend.
So we should take a moment just here. The space within the Webway, because it's kind of is both limited and limitless. It's a weird thing. I always view the Webway as actually being like a collection of tubes, where some tubes are wider than others. And that's why it's not just one centralized place. It spreads all over the place. It's a very, envisioning the Webway is really complicated.
That's because there's effectively wormholes inside the Webway, because sometimes you have to travel and sometimes it's instantaneous and sometimes you have to go through a tube.
Sometimes you have to leave the Webway to come out and come back in the Webway. It's a bit of a weird thing. But so when he begins to expand Kamara out, it's not just a city and then we're adding more bits on the outside of the city. He's actually like opening old Webway portals and going to other spots and building stuff there. But it functions as if it's one giant place in that regard. If you need to move around it, it's not like, you're in like a part of town with traffic.
Weirdly enough, I envision it as being a limitless labyrinth.
Yeah, no, I believe it is. But it's not limitless in the sense of like you have to go through the labyrinth, though, to reach the limitless.
No, you can just pounce. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not.
But it's still.
It's not centralized.
Yep. Yeah. It was one of the biggest things is why one of the reasons we talked about last week is you. One, because it's so big, but also because why have people not just invaded and taken care of it? Because you don't know where the hell you're going.
Exactly. You go and you could hit, you might even hit maybe more of the central areas, but there's so many like splinter areas, it doesn't really matter. So as a function of this, the Dark Realm is kind of might be a better term than just calling it Kamara all the time, is kind of is a collection of some spots that are very accessible and some spots that are maybe less accessible.
Not at all.
Yeah, not at all. Or some spots that are intentionally hard to access.
Yeah, there's also places where you go, hey, this is how you enter it. And if you don't use the special code, you jump through the Sphere of Annihilation. Yeah. And
that's where the homunculi live.
Yeah.
Next episode, we're going to Homunculus, just FYI, not this one. But at one point during the prime of the Eldar, it was actually all connected. And then post-fall, there were some losses. So this story, what I like about this story, what Vec then does is he endeavors to start reconnecting some of the Webway. Because post-fall, you just had some areas actually did have demonic incursion into them. So those ones had to get closed off. And Vec just decides to start opening them up and spreading back out. And the interesting thing is it's identical to what the Emperor of Mankind did. He went out and said, oh, we can travel again now? Well, we're going to go through and I'm going to reclaim the Dark Realm for the Drukhari. And they went out, and so Vec effectively goes on his own version of the Great Crusade. So this is kind of funny. This story I like a lot because Vec's Great Crusade is the Emperor's Great Crusade, just with a lot more violence.
Yeah. A lot more violence and a lot of betrayal.
Yeah. So
if you're doing something, there's a good chance at the end of it, you're like, oh, so you're going to kill all of us? Okay, cool. Especially when the covens are involved.
Yeah.
Because you go, so we did all this work, but you don't want anybody to know where this is? Oh, probably should have saw this coming. Okay.
That's on us. All right. Let's knock this out. There were kind of a few different reasons each realm had become hidden away. So Vec had to reclaim it. So the first one, the most common one, was they just lost their connection. Slesh's birth destroyed a lot of the Eldar. The vast majority of the Eldar Empire, so I'd say a lot of the Empire, the vast majority of it. And
wildly the vast majority.
It's not written this way, but my guess is a lot of the Eldar, as this happened, destroyed the Webways themselves to prevent the Eldar who were inside the Webway. I could see them just destroying Webway gates so that the
Slaanesh. Well, Harlequins are known for that.
Exactly. And that's why I say it, because the Harlequins did it. My guess is it was more than just the Harlequins doing it, but it actually isolated them out. So Vec, by the way, Vec just opened all the portals. It doesn't say how he did this. He just does it. I've read four codexes.
With a quickness, by the way.
Yeah, all of the other than in fact reopened the portal.
Yeah, like he apparently there's some switch he just went over there
and like, oh yeah, this was off. You have to reset the GFCI. So just press that button and it clicks, and now look, everything turns on now.
You just flip back on the main breaker. It's just all good.
Exactly. So anyway, Vect is this. What's funny about this is these Eldar who are dark Eldar have been in these pocket dimensions for like 7,000 years. And Vect and his forces, for a lot of them, arrived and were just greeted as like saviors. They were just like, yeah, this is awesome. And Vect, of course, says, you're all working for me now. And they're like, yeah, that's also totally fine.
The best part about Vect is just the devil, but he convinces you that it's super awesome.
To be fair, he's the devil, but he's also talking to demons. So it's not like
true.
Vect wasn't doing this to like paradise worlds of the Imperium. Like, and by the way, I'm going to torture all of you to death. He's recruiting troops, and they're all like, "Yeah, actually, this works for me because we were all dying."
Yeah,
and this sucked.
I'll give you that. It's funny to me because like so many people were like, "Yay!
Yeah, so glad you're here." And it's like he looks kind of mean. Yeah, he's definitely mean.
Yeah, he's got some issues, dude.
Yeah. But the truth is, you also didn't have much of a choice, Stu, because you also could say, no, I don't want to join you. And he just goes, cool. These are called incubi. They're going to have a quick conversation with you, and I'm going to leave.
Also, you want the incubi conversation before you want the homunculi conversation.
Well, yeah, they're both there, but it's more, yeah. So that does bring up the next group, though, because some of these pocket dimensions, and again, this is just like with the Great Crusade. Sometimes he would open the pocket dimension and walk into it, and he'd find a group of Drukhari who were living their best life. You know, they were successful. They got food. They have all this stuff. They're raiding. They're pillaging. They're partying. And I don't want to listen to you. And Vect solved that really quickly. Let's just put it this way. Like, we don't have a lot of stories about those realms, and that's because Vect didn't write it down.
Look, man, the history belongs to the victors. So
yeah, there is another group though that's where Vect started. To me, this is maybe some of Vect's best work, and we're going to cover them more in the next episode. And these are the people who actually were intentionally hiding away from the Dark Eldar because of what they were doing.
We're going to talk about more this week, but I have to state this now. These are people in a realm of effectively demons because they actually continue to live by causing suffering.
Yeah.
These were people that were doing things that were so messed up that those people that live by hurting other people went, that's too weird for us.
Yeah, you guys got to go over there. And so these guys hid away so they could do the most messed up stuff they could possibly think of. And some of these guys were actually hidden before the fall, to Brad's point. They were hiding. This isn't like a new thing. They were like, oh, yeah, I don't need anyone seeing what I'm doing.
It's pretty weird.
But Vect saw these and immediately went, nope, you're a resource. And he partnered with him because, and again, we'll cover this more in the next episode, these people could create weapons of war. They had methods of torture that we could maximize energy taking.
He also went, I will provide you with resources to make stuff for me.
Because a thing that Vect needs more than anything, again, is the soul energy to power the Drukhari.
It's the suffering of souls.
And the more suffering we do, the more energy. And so if he has more of that resource, he has more power. And what he realized in some of these realms, namely the homunculi, is they could actually give him a lot more of this energy, which basically means he brought supply chain management into the Dark Realm.
Well, so he also was maximizing efficiency because you're like, I heard you can't get blood from a turnip. And those guys are like, I can.
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, because the homunculi effectively were, is if one soul could produce 10 power rating, whatever you want to call it, the homunculi could make it 100 power rating.
Yeah. Or they were just
like 1,000, the real, like
yeah, they're just depending. You're like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so I laughed. At this point, he actually became Gilliman because he added a bunch of, he had structure and organization. In fact,
is a badass, like individually.
Oh, yeah.
But he's, it's the same thing with G-Man to make a comparison.
They're a very good comparison.
He's wildly better at evil bureaucracy than he is just fighting.
Yeah.
He's so much better at his planning. And during all of this, we're going to continue. We'll get a little bit more because he's hands-on. He starts to.
Oh, yeah. Vect sees. Yeah, let's dive in. Because what Vect does here to me is just freaking awesome. We'll go through this pretty quickly here. So Vect began his process of ascension in M37. So for the last 4,000 years, it's been nonstop war. But the expansion that he's been doing with this war has been almost completely successful. In fact, it's so incredibly successful that modern Kamara is impossibly larger than what he started with in 37.
Yep.
However, his challenge is that every single second of every single day, there is opposition. Because Drukhari, at their core, are all in it for themselves.
They wildly deceitful. And they expect that to happen. So no matter what alliances you have, everyone knows you're going to break them.
Yeah, everyone's looking for the next one. Every alliance is temporary, as opposed to the Eldar, who really are aligned on raising their craft world up. It's the complete inverse. So Vect has this problem of nonstop assassination attempts, rebellion attempts, backroom scheming. And he has to figure out a way to rule a realm based around this. And so I like this a lot because from the outside looking in, they look like a unified force. This is why the pirate kingdom makes the most sense. If you engage the Drukhari, they fight perfectly with each other. It's hard to actually tell apart that there's multiple factions. They all hate each other. But once you actually understand the Drukhari and you go into the Dark City, which do not go to the Dark City.
It's bad news, man.
It's usually not a good, you don't want to be there. You learn it's deception, murder, everything nonstop. It's actually not that far off the Imperium.
but the thing is that he does, nobody plays people off better than Vect does. And he does this the entire time he's going up. Because again, he makes it so that if you challenge him, well, you're going to lose something. Or if you're, he plots everyone against each other. It's like, oh yeah, you could do that, but then you don't get this or he doesn't get this. And you also start to get into Vect. He starts to Kaiser Soze everybody, which is you don't know if you're working for Vect.
So yes, let's talk about like how Vect then is able to rule this. So the first thing Vect does, as we said before, Kamara was originally ruled by this nobility. And just like on Earth, you know, actually, when you talk about nobility, it's by birth. So these are people who were born into a family that was wealthy. They're in charge for no reason other than because
they've
always been in charge. And the Eldar culture is one of the most elite cultures when it comes to elitism that has ever existed in the galaxy. And the Drukhari were brutal at this. Every rung of the societal ladder within Eldar culture, the people at that rung view everyone below them as complete scum. But they look at the people above them in traditional Eldar culture as deserving and belonging to be there. It's probably closest, unfortunately, to the caste system, the old caste system. Yeah. That's hopefully gone by now. I don't know if it's still there. That thing sucks. Anyway. but the Eldar, this is what they had. The Drukhari had this a little bit different. They actually had envy for those above them. And this is...
I would go into envy and hatred.
Yeah, hatred. Well, the hatred comes later.
Eternal hatred for the rule.
Yeah, the hatred comes later, but it's mostly envy. So as the pleasure cults rose, as we said last time, a lot of these nobility moved into Kamara. So they built these giant houses. And I describe these houses... The best one I can give you historically is East Indian Trading Company, where they are each house, they're an independent body. Like they're not part of the government, but they have their own government, military, and currency. So each of these houses, they were incredibly powerful. Vect killed them all.
Yep.
And decides to actually make a system based on merit, not on birth, which sounds a lot better until we define what merit is.
I was just about to say, yeah. Merit isn't, you're doing good for the community. We're going to make you better. You're like, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for a very, no, it's terrible for the community. Who am I kidding? It's murder. It's just
so
murder.
Much murder.
Yeah. So he creates, obviously the first one he creates is his own, the Cabal of the Black Heart. That is what he runs and he rules Kamar. And it is the largest cabal by a almost infinite power. And it is the most influential. There's no other secondary. Then he allows
creation. It's also the poster child for 40K.
Exactly.
Dark Elder Island.
Yeah. So then he allows for these smaller cabals to create. And when I say allows, he actually doesn't give his blessing. He just doesn't bother with them as long as they don't bother with him.
He doesn't stop them. It's the same way when you watch the mob movies and stuff where they go, I know you're skimming. I just don't care.
Well, I think of it more in the sense of it because I want to make it clear that when I say he allows for a cabal to be like, it's like the Queen of England or the king, like knighting someone and creating, or like, you know, what's the warrant of trade? It's not that stuff. It's gang culture. Small, you know, you have large gang organizations and small gangs will pop up. And that's all the cabals are. There's these smaller gangs.
Smaller gangs, but they become, see, you're like, hey, what's a smaller gang? You're like somebody that would rule multiple systems.
Eventually, but they start small.
True.
And then they have to earn their way up by killing every other cabal.
That's the biggest thing. And they talk about it in a couple of the codexes where Vect wants them to weed out because he thinks it's inefficient if there's too many.
Yeah.
So he wants the smaller gangs to kill each other so that you can make a more efficient, bigger gang.
Yeah. Yeah. What Vect was doing was saying to all the people, you can get as much power as you want here so long as you can survive.
Yep.
And that was his thing. It's so long as you can survive. And what that meant was, if you mess with me, I will kill you.
I was waiting for that because I go, one of the things for survival is you can do whatever heinous stuff. You can try to disrupt anything. The problem is, and this is the fall of many wannabe cabals. Again, like I said, Vect did a bunch of Kaiser Soze stuff where you don't know. People wouldn't know that they messed with Vex's supply chain. And then he's like, well, you did. I don't care that you didn't know. And now you don't exist.
And that's what it was. Because Vect wasn't trying to raise up. And I think you're getting the point there that I actually really want to hammer home. He wasn't trying to get the best murderers. He was trying to get the best, you know, organized murderers.
Yes.
Because he needs people who understand consequence, people who understand subterfuge. Because, in all candor, the Drukhari are kind of a dying race. They don't have spirit stones. And so the only way that they can survive and grow is by inflicting death and pain and torture on others. And as a result of this, if you're trying to do that, you have a much higher, let's just say it, turnover rate. Because, you know, an Eldar craft world can just leave the galaxy. They could just go away. They've got the spirit stones. Slaanesh can't touch them unless they die. So they could just go, peace out. I'm off to Andromeda.
Which they kind of do, but yeah, we're not going to talk about
but
that.
That's the thing. Or dinosaur riders.
Yay!
The Drukhari can't escape. They do have fleets, but not like that. They can't leave the galaxy. They have to do, you know, murder and torture. The problem with the Drukhari is that if they don't harvest souls for themselves, they will go extinct. So Vect needs only the best under him. Or as the great Randy Savage would say, he needs the cream to rise to the top. Fun note, if you know who Randy Savage is, it's also the Macho Man Randy Savage. And there was one time that his cocaine system tested positive for blood. If you don't get that reference, just go to YouTube and type in Macho Man Randy Savage and go, oh my God.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
This constant conflict within the Dark Realm was not only between the organizations, but also within them. And so you see a lot more of this within the cabals, like specifically. So each cabal has a leader, and that leader is called an archon, which is the same term actually that existed before. The archon is an old term. It's an Eldar term for leader, basically. So to become an archon, you have to be the most cunning, the best fighter. You have to have the best, diplomacy, etc. And getting to the role of Archon, I would actually argue, is easier than holding it, because everyone wants to be an Archon. So your competition is kind of all there, but there's a guy up at top. The second you become the Archon, everyone's trying to kill you.
Yep. The good news on that is you have access to some of the best defensive technology in the galaxy.
Yeah. And the Archons are incredibly powerful, because to be an Archon, you have to really absorb enough of this power from pain to make yourself a blender of a fighter. Damn it. I just remembered 8th edition. They were just, sorry. I get upset about this. So we're going to have some comments in this over the next couple of casts where I really do believe 8th edition Drukhari was the best book for them that they ever had from the rule standpoint.
Well, they got to be powered up.
They got powered up from pain. The Archon having the 2+ invuln was, he still technically has it, but it was better back then. There's a bunch of different rules. And the Archon, so to that point, the Archon is the pinnacle of Drukhari. They are, they've absorbed so much power that they're incredibly fast, incredibly strong. And also, they have to be incredibly intelligent in order to get there, which makes them psychotic level warriors. When you read the books, when an Archon goes to war, they just slaughter 30, 40 men without even trying. They just appear and it is pure devastation. Why are they strength 3 and toughness 3 in the game? I have no idea.
They also show up in effectively a smoking jacket.
Yeah.
Because they have a piece of equipment on them that creates a force field around them.
So they can fight in whatever they put on that morning.
Yeah.
If it's winter, gray sweatpants.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, whatever.
You're like, what are you going to wear? Also, their weapon of choice is still the Agonizer, which is a stick if you don't know. A guy with a tank top and a pair of 2 short shorts just rolled out with a short stick and started beating up on, dreadnoughts.
Yeah.
I don't really know what just happened there.
In the lore. So just for people who have some difference, those people who play the tabletop and don't really know Drukhari lore, in the lore, an Archon would just basically pull a dreadnought apart. They would jump on it and it would, like nothing. They'd go right through it.
They never hit him.
Yeah. In the tabletop, the dreadnought will punch him to death. It annoys me.
When Azrael Vect had a model.
Yeah, that's the last time. But honestly, an Archon, we're playing
winning 10th, everything in a 3.
Yeah, you're playing 10th edition now. An Archon into a dreadnought.
I don't know if he wounds him.
That's my point. The dreadnought just wrecks him. But Archon in the lore?
No.
The dreadnought's just, that dreadnought's dead. And he's jumping off the dreadnought to go kill the troops who are near the dreadnought.
Yeah, he looks like Yoda fighting.
They're freaking incredible. I mean, they've actually killed assassins. The argument I use is it's John Wick with superpowers.
But it's also, they don't do a good job enough about this. There's a wild difference in the power of Archons. Having Archon means
fine. All the 10th edition ones are the lame ones.
I'm just saying there is a difference between that. Some of these guys have been around forever and they're collecting souls.
The Imperium has no record of an Archon in battle, because the way the Archons fight is so fast and so aggressive and so skilled, they actually can't film it. This drives me insane.
Even the low level guys are like that. Yeah. That's my whole point is there's a difference between you fighting Vect and you fighting Steve, the Archon.
If you're a human, not really.
Probably not. Yeah. You still get smoked. I'm just saying there is, especially for this,
The truth is, an Archon should be able to possibly take out a Primarch. I mean, that's the level when you read the lore of how hard they hit. And I'm going to have some Drukhari people who are like, well, what about Succubi? Nope. Like, the truth is,
in the game,
completely opposite. But the exception of maybe Lilith, most Succubi would get rumple stomped by an Archon. I love Archons. And yeah, if you can't hear my anger, it's because, it's also a really cool model. It's like everything about it's good. The Drukhari line got remade and the models are beautiful. And I just think an Archon in combat should just be blendering the tabletop. I'll pay 300 points for it. I don't mind, you know, make him the same point total as Mortarion, but that's the damage he should be able to do.
Not in the game.
I know. I'm just mad. Actually, one thing I should mention, though, I do want to point out, Brad made a comment about these guys fighting and whatever they put on that day. The coolest part about an Archon fighting, because I just remembered this, they also look bored while they're doing it. Like, they're such skilled fighters that when during real space raids, when Archons stride out to fight something, it usually is because some level of whatever they're fighting was offering up resistance to the Cabalite troops. And the Archon was irritated by this.
Well,
comes out of his like either Venom or Raider and is kind of like genuinely pissed off that he has to do this and then wrecks thing. So he'll look bored.
Well, it's a big, to go into how they are anyways, though, average Eldar are haughty, look down on regular races. The Dark Eldar are the worst of the worst of the worst.
And the Archon is the worst of the worst of the worst of the worst.
Yeah. So you're like, one, I don't think anybody else is worth anything. Yeah. I definitely don't think this other race.
Yeah. Like this thing in front of me is like, I'm trying to conclude my raid so I can go back to my realm. Cause this place, by the way, that I'm in, this real space is gross and I hate it. You're delaying me.
Yeah.
So
from,
I'm going
to from getting to watching, eating my breakfast so I can torture people while I'm eating.
So I'm just going to step off this boat and kill you. And I'm not like, cause this isn't like a world eater who's like, oh, I'm excited for combat. This is an Archon saying he's more mad at his troops for failing at it and annoyed that you're still standing here.
Cause they're not the best. We'll go to the people that fight to fight.
Yeah.
But these guys are not. They're not fighting. They're fighting because they have a purpose. They just want to it's all. I'd say that the Cabals are amazing amazingly evil, but amazing because they're all about getting the job done. What is the most efficient way to get what we want?
Well, and let's talk about why. The reason behind that is because we said it over and over again, and we're going to keep saying it, the Dark City is all about planning and scheming. So as an Archon, I have to make sure that my Cabal is happy beneath me because they're the first ones who are going to stab me in the back and are not exposed to an opposition who will then come murder all of us. So they have to conserve their energy and their efforts so that no enemy can find a moment of weakness to take them out. Because if you're a Cabal, your most likely death is another Cabal.
Cabal, for sure.
And so they'll jump on quick. So an Archon, you have to be a master of the perfect strike. And there's actually a really great line in one of the books where it says that, you know, Tzeentch could actually learn a thing or two from the long-term plotting that Archons of the Drukhari do. This is how good they are at this. It's not just the real space raids. It's also the dark space raids they go on, everything they do.
And I'm going to give, because we frequently get people asking us for recommendations on this, the best lore, because there's not that many dark Eldar books.
Yeah, it'd be weird to write.
It's Codex stuff, and it's supplement stuff. And I'm not going to tell you to go get the books because John always yells at me. Just go download them online.
Oh, the codexes? The reason I say it, by the way, it's not because I'm like some super pirate. It's because if you tried to find a fifth edition Drukhari codex,
somebody will charge you an arm and a leg for no reason.
Because they're thrown away. And the truth is like most people, not most, but a lot of people throw the codexes out when the edition ends because they're just playing the game. So there's just not that many left. And so if you can find them in a PDF form, find them in a PDF form. That's what I'm saying. It's not because if GW had them in print, I would not tell people to pirate them, but they don't have them in print.
But there's really great. The small stories are just...
Oh, yeah. It's how I wrote most of the codex. I write these codexes. It's how I wrote most of the podcast was the codexes. They're insane good. But yeah, so let's move on to the kind of the Archon and the Cabals and what they're doing for the Dark City. So these guys are building... These are massive construction projects are being undertaken. As a Cabal rises, they begin building all the things they need to keep their rise going. So, you know, places to live. Those are the weapons, ships, arenas. We're going to cover arenas in the next cast pretty heavily. These arenas are just for death to soak up energy. They're also helping build the laboratories. You know, not curing polio laboratories, by the way.
You're like, what is this lab dedicated to? Keeping people alive longer. Oh, that sounds really good. So we can torture them longer.
While they're being tortured. That seems counterproductive.
That is less.
It's not. Not to us. They've also got prisons, everything. They're building all this up. Because even though Vect overthrew the nobility, he kept almost all the same stuff after it is. I mean, Eldar...
He kept the infrastructure. But he also did the world's best propaganda about it. He's like, everything is different. And then you just went to the same thing you did before.
Well, the part I find funny about this is these are pirate bands. That's what they are. It's a pirate kingdom. But it's actually, Kamara is known as being oddly beautiful because they're still Eldar. And Eldar, their original purpose from the old ones were poets and architects.
Artisans. Yeah. It's just... And the thing about it is they also get offended by not beauty. They still think about Dark Eldar armor, weaponry, everything. Everything has to be a certain look and aesthetic.
Yeah, everything's got to, it has to be beautiful. And so they talk about the spires that jut out from all over the Dark City. They're beautiful. The way that the angle that they come out, it's not archaic or anarchistic. It's actually got an anarchistic beauty to it. It's how it's described. So because, they're still Eldar. But the other thing, though, is they're also highly competitive Eldar. So each of the Cabal's sections are trying to build taller spires that are more perfect. Their arenas. Oh, the arenas are astronomically large with more and more impossible things like zero gravity fields and, you know.
Well, I think that's one of my favorites. They have not a ton, but they have a decent amount of short stories about these kind of things.
Yeah.
And how the artisans are people that have more security around them than a lot of the higher level guys.
Yeah, because because the truth is we can replace this Archon tomorrow with the 10 million other people who want to be the Archon, but that guy can build. And so, no one touch Sean. Like, Sean's a no. Like, Sean gets to do Sean stuff, you know?
You're like, whoa, you can't touch him.
Yeah.
You can murder our boss. You can't murder that guy.
Interestingly enough, and we'll cover the next one, it's also true with the homunculi. There is a viewpoint on them as well.
But true on that.
Before we close out on the Archons, though, and the Cabals, there is one thing that I do want to cover very briefly. The Court of the Archon.
And how much you love it?
It's stupid, and I hate it. I intentionally, and Brad's laughing when I say this, intentionally chose to not cover the Slith, Lemayan, what are the other ones?
Urgle.
Brad's been playing the game 30 years. So how many editions? That 7 editions you played through?
I've started in the second.
Okay, so you started in second edition. Drukhari.
It's been nine.
Drukhari joined the game around fourth edition, somewhere in that round, fourth, fifth edition. In how many editions was the Cult of the Court of the Archon even playable?
Ninth?
One. And it was abusive and stupid.
Yes, it was.
Just going to say it now. People are running like nine Sliths. That's it. That's all. Just... John complaining. If you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll probably do a cast on, you know, us complaining about
broken mechanics.
Yeah, just stupid things. It's when things just didn't match the lore, and that was one of the worst ones. The Court of the Archon were supposed to be these kind of like, I don't know, the jesters. I don't really have a great term for them. They would move around with an Archon. They would protect him. They would do a bunch of stuff like that. That was the idea in the lore. And then they just wrote the rules wrong on the tabletop, and people were bringing like armies of them.
They did suck for forever. So I'm fine with something being OP for a little while. That's just how I am.
Yeah, no. No, they should have just taken them out of the game, moved them to Legends like they did all of my favorite things.
You're always saying half your cabinet.
Yeah. It's like nut snicks.
Brandon.
What if I own a lot of bikers? You're not going to like what we do next. Anyway. So from there, I want to jump into one of the main things that the Cabals use to keep power, which are the raids. This is the number one way to keep the people underneath you happy, is you have to...
It's also very complex how they go about it.
Because
raids are... Sometimes there's one-offs, but there's raids a lot of times are how the Cabals work, the inside Cabals work. These are complex people together, which almost always is room for some backstabbing. But this is how you go collect souls. This is how you get
resources. This is the only way. This is the only way that the Drukhari can survive. Is these? And they're called real space raids because they go into
real space
and then raid. So as we said before, each Cabal has a ruler that's an Archon, and the way that you keep people below you happy when you're a leader is you just do pirate stuff, and that's what this is. They need to raid so that they can get souls, so they can torture them, so they can then, feed their soul back and not die. And got to make them. You got to get them. So what they found was, let's just go get them.
And the thing is that this is why Drakari's scary.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. Say you're the Imperium. I'll go backwards on this. You're the Imperium and you're trying to defend your area. Everyone else is trying to conquest and gain. Drakari don't. They just show up and they take things.
Yep.
And it could also be these tiny raids where they hit the outskirts of Toledo.
Yeah.
And other times they go,
no one noticed.
I just
it could be happening now. And people are like, it's no.
But then there's other raids where they go, we're gonna take the entire population of a planet.
Yeah.
And what it looks like the Imperium is, why did they do it here and not here? And you're like, I think they just rolled dice.
Yeah.
But it isn't. They're super complex because the bigger raids go into how many alliances are you trying to make?
Well, yeah, let's dive into that. This is really kind of fun in my mind. It's one of my favorite parts about the Drukhari. So first off, outside of the Harlequins, who we will be doing a cast on, don't worry, the Drukhari have the greatest access to the webways.
Yes.
And the problem with webways is, and this is my interpretation of it because it's not really that well written, it's hard to tell if the Imperium or other races are aware of the webway gates. They find them from time to time.
Emperor knows that that's it, but he didn't tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, maybe Magnus does. Kidding. But that's the thing. So when we think about webway gates, we think of the ones we see in the game, these giant, wraithbone structures that are arch-based, et cetera. But it seems like there's a lot of webways that may just look like rocks.
No, we did the cast about that, where they had the huge fight where they accidentally opened.
But yeah, it was a big mountain, exactly.
It's right.
Like the Drukhari have access to these everywhere. And so this is kind of a cool trick for them, because no one really knows that you're in danger until you are. So there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of worlds throughout the galaxy that have webway gates on them that the local residents are not aware of. Like
there's also asteroid gates, which is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's moving around. There's a ton of them in space.
Right. They just made stations.
But yeah, all of a sudden, I did like this idea of someone's just, on a paradise world, sitting on a beach, like in the shade of like a big, like nice big rock, just having a nice, having a nice drink. And all of a sudden, a nightmare comes out of that rock. Yeah. First one down.
One of my favorites about this is when the Drukhari raid, again, they're not raiding for battle, for conquest. They're raiding for maximum efficiency of what they're doing. So they want to be here and gone.
And so what's cool about this is that the Drukhari raids are not done, for the most part, by an individual group. They're almost always partnered up. And again, going back to Pirate Kingdom, the idea is a Drukhari will pick an area, usually, and the Archon will then talk to the other Archons and say, hey, here's the amount of souls that are available here. Do you want in on this raid? And they go together.
Well, my favorite part of this, you're downplaying it. You're going to get me excited about this. One of my favorites is you didn't go to your ally. You go to your worst enemy because you know that when you come back, there's a good chance you're going to be attacked. So you take your most powerful enemy and you go, we need to both go on this raid to get these souls because I need to know you're not going to hit me after I'm weaker. You need to be a little weak also. Mm-hmm. So then we both are limping back into the Dark City.
But they also do this, to Brad's point, they also make sure that we both go on three. You know, I mean, it's a pretty good Lethal Weapon joke here. It's 1, 2, 3 and go, or 1, 2, 3? You know?
So it's a big thing because they partner all the time with their worst enemies, but with also a deal you can't refuse because this is a great raid.
This is the only way.
Because they scouted it out.
They scouted it out. And that rival might say, no, I'm not going. But if he doesn't go and this raid's successful, his rival's now more powerful. So he almost has to go on the raid with him to keep his rival in check from himself. So let's dive into the stages of the Drukhari raid. So the first one is scouting. Not, you know, the sacrificial scouts that Brad uses.
Sacrificial teenage scouts. Thank you very much.
So the Drukhari, they'll just send a couple Drukhari into an area, you know, via webway. And the Drukhari, again, and I like to harp on this, their ships are so fast, they're actually undetectable. A few Drukhari on like a Venom shooting out of a webway would just be a blink, and you might notice like a disruption of the air, like leave a little bit of a wake around. And so what these guys do is they're rocketing around the area and they're scouting for a few things. First, the value. How many souls, how many beings are they can grab? How concentrated are they? And how much agony do they think they could take? So, you know, obviously, for example, like you want to make sure that you're like, the example is an ant mound. The Drukhari could capture an ant mound and tear the legs off every single ant in the colony, but that's not going to produce that much. You want things that they've seen before. Humans are a good one for this. Tau are actually another good one, I assume, but where they can be tortured. I bring that because I'm not sure if Tyranids would be actually that much value. Is what I'm getting at. Necrons probably aren't that much value because they don't feel. But that's what I'm saying. You want things that feel, and they want to go there, and they want to kind of like slowly pull them apart and do horrible things to them.
Well, they want to install terror on them.
Exactly. So the next thing they're going to look for are, what are the defenses? You know, is there a space marine outpost? So we're probably not going to bother. It's just because more work. Could they beat the space marines? Yeah. But
why?
I have access to the entire galaxy. I'll just go where they aren't.
And again, I'm not fighting for conquest or to fight to prove
anything. Exactly. Why make this difficult? I'll skip to the next one. You know, same thing, but every world does have a planetary defense force. Some of them may be in the process of raising a regiment. So yeah, we're going to make sure that we're not jumping out of our webway into all of the Lasguns. It's again, just, I can go anywhere. Why bother? Then they'll take this all back to form the plan for the raid. Another interesting one that they will do, though, is they'll also check flow of traffic to and from the system. Because what you also don't want to do is hit the raid. And then, because the Imperium can move quickly. That's the thing.
They also still do have precogs.
The bigger ones, they can move a fleet like that. They do use warp travel. So if the Imperial Navy is just nearby.
Is there effectively a jump point near me?
Yeah. And so what you don't want to do is we come in and we begin our raid, and then all of a sudden the salamanders show up, and now we've got a real fight in our hands. What they actually look for is low importance worlds. This is why they don't hit hive worlds very often, is because they're too important to the Imperium. They hit, you know, pseudo agri worlds. Feudal worlds are really good. These types of things that are a little bit on the edge that they can take, to Brad's point, a chunk of the population, and the Imperium just goes, eh.
They're also wildly, they know so much about the Imperium, which is crazy.
Yeah.
they'll hit things and just go, oh, we could take the whole planet. You're like, no, because if we take the whole planet, then we'll get responses.
Yeah. And we don't want that. We don't want to get a response because the thing, and we'll get to why in a minute, kind of the end of this. So at this point, once they've checked all the boxes for this raid's worth it, now they go and form their alliances. And, you know, the alliances are going to vary depending on the size of the raid. And these alliances, like I said, they're almost always going to involve rivals. They may also, though, involve cults. They may involve the witch cults or the homunculi cults. It really is going to depend on what they're trying to do and where they're going and kind of who wants to be there, for lack of a better phrase.
It's wild because the cabals themselves have to over-plan to the next level.
Yeah.
One, because your enemy's there. Two, because we just involved the covens and the cults, which both have their own plan for what they want to do when they get here.
Yes.
Which might have absolutely nothing to do with your plan. So you have to have a
plan. Especially the covens.
Yeah. You have to, to be fair, the witch cults are kind of a problem sometimes also because they want to go just show how awesome they are. Because I'm going to do 5 backflips before I hit this guy now instead of only 4. And you're like, you're not even supposed to be fighting over there. You're like, where else would I do my 5 backflips?
The problem with the witch cults in a raid is you might say, we're going to go there, we're going to capture 1 million bodies. And the witch cults kill 200,000 of them because they just wanted to keep killing. Yeah. Like, we needed them.
I've been streaming to my Instagram this entire time about how awesome I was.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the remake of Suicide Squad, first off, you should see it. But basically that, where they go through the whole village and it's like, oh, yeah.
And they're trying to get style points. Yeah. That's why they fight. We'll get into them more.
So again, the remake of Suicide Squad. Really is... By the way,
but it's a big thing.
For those of you who saw the first Suicide Squad,
it was terrible.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen. Watch the second one. It's quite good.
I will second that.
Yeah, it's really funny.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So once the alliances are set, now the raid is time to go. And when a raid begins, basically the entirety of the force explode out of the web way at once. It's not a trick.
And effectively full speed, by the way.
And this is for two reasons. One is to just overwhelm the opposition to see what's there. But two, the real one is to make sure that no one's holding back to then shoot you in the back halfway through the
raid. So everybody has to show up full speed right now. Yeah. Go ahead.
Exactly. We're all going at once.
And they also have the weird thing on this is if anybody doesn't do that, the rest of the forces will immediately turn on them.
Yeah, well, the forces will actually, basically, if you come through the webway and people are missing, raid's over, you go back through the webway, you'll kill them because you know what they were trying to do.
100%.
It's way,
There's the backstabbiest of backstabbers. It's really
they really are out of their mind. But let's talk about how the strike actually is, because the Drukhari never attack from the front. They use a term that they call the flaying, in which it's just these constantly overlapping, fast-turning passes. They move at incredible speeds, and they're just shooting out of them. The Elder Dark are accurate at full speed.
It's not even just shooting out of them. They do hand-to-hand on drive-bys.
Oh, yeah. They'll cut
the Incubi are the best at that.
Yeah, just coming through.
The whole reason that they have the slightly longer weapon
is so they can lean out and cut your head off as they come through.
Yeah, and someone just went by at Mach 11, and you went, Timmy just died. And I don't even know why.
I felt a hard wind and all of them are dead. But the reason they do this is multiple things. First off, it creates a feeling within the enemy that they're being attacked from all sides. So they can't concentrate fire in any one area. So the Eldar are just making all these passes. They're not taking like a giant brunt that can take them out. It also starts wearing the enemy down. Example is like a sandstorm where they're picking all these pieces off and the enemy is slowly, they don't realize it, being shepherded in to one area.
The worst part about this for the people that they're fighting against is the Eldar, the Dark Eldar are getting more powerful because they're actually getting power from your suffering.
As you're dying.
They are getting faster and better.
Yeah.
They're getting more accurate, the more terrified.
Why don't we get So I bitch about 10th edition again. Like each battle round, I got more and more stuff.
Although the last one used to.
Yeah. Although the last one was always, you're immune to leadership. I don't care.
Yeah. The game is over by then.
Exactly. But the additional thing is now as the battle grows, the intensity picks up. Because at first, like I said, it's just a massive fire all over the place. But once the enemy's been hemmed into a position and starts coalescing, then the Drukhari bring their heavy weapons. And we didn't really mention this very well, but I was going to say it. Drukhari heavy weapons are Eldar heavy weapons, but in some ways better, depending on your edition.
Also, they're on things that move fast.
So. Yeah. So they start now, they just start taking out the heavy defenders. Everything that's there, the Drukhari just wreck them because they're held into one spot. Usually the Dark Lances are going, they're done. Once that's over, the worst part begins, which is where the hand-to-hand combat begins. Because the Drukhari, at their core, they do have ranged combat, but what they're really good is hand-to-hand. And they just come, these boats, and when we say burst out of the transports, they don't roll up, stop, open the front door, and come out. As this ship comes past you at like Mach 2, 50 people jump out of it, land perfectly.
Kick you.
Yeah, all superhero landing style, and then just wreck you.
Yeah, and it's... And again,
these raids are over quick.
Well, also, the hand-to-hand guys have been actually getting more powerful during this because you've been suffering, you've been dying, they're getting juiced up. They're now faster than they already were, and now we're going to start fighting, and it gets even worse.
Yeah. So after the defenses are all removed, this means both entrenched vehicle, but also individuals, what I call the harvest begins. Where everyone is just rounded up and pacified, which pacified could be tied to the outside of a ship.
that's a real thing. The Dark Eldar vehicles, the raiding vehicles, are equipped with effectively cages. Nets, hooks, they just have ways to put multiple guys. They have equipment, even in the game, where they just drive by and just snatch Fishhook style a whole bunch of people and go, cool, now we're leaving.
You're coming with me. So, and everyone then is brought back to the Dark Realm for a multitude of not good
purposes.
So we had to do this at some point. So I decided to hem it in here. Oh, there it is. Brad knows where we're about to go. So we talked about the real space raids. I want to spend some time on the vehicles and the weapons in the real space raid. Poison. We're going to talk about poison now.
So many poison in Dark Eldar.
So, as we've said before, the Drukhari's entire style of attack is speed combined with speed with a heavy dosage of speed.
Speed.
I love Drukhari vehicles.
They also have no OSHA because all the Drukhari vehicles are... Is there any safety? What are you talking about? Hang on. Also, you should be fighting out the outside of this. Isn't this a spaceship? It's also open-topped.
So on the Eldar cast, we talk about Eldar jet bike riders and that they could take a jet bike to Mach 3 and then make a 90-degree turn. This is not an Eldar-only skill. The Drukhari also have this skill. The Drukhari actually can do it on hoverboards.
Well... We'll talk about it where we go into the cults because they get to do it a little bit better because they are bananas out of their mind on drugs.
It does help. Yeah, they're just loaded.
Well, they get, it's not even just space speed. They get the newest concoction of the day.
Well, but even, here's the thing. Even without them, though, the Drukhari pilots are probably the best pilots in the galaxy
it's a control. 100%.
I mean, it's like, oh God. I mean, no,
it's not even close.
I know how much you love aircraft, but Razor Wing jet fighters are.
I know. I hate aircraft, the passion, but
the Razor Wing jet fighter might be the only thing that the rules in Flying Circus kind of made sense for.
Yeah. And the thing is that a bunch of these guys are doing things that are not possible for, especially for human pilots, because they just die.
Yeah. Well, and to give you a better example of them is like one of the jet bikes that they use is called a Reaver. And the Reaver, they describe it as a rider on a Reaver doesn't steer the bike. They basically merge with it. It becomes part of their body. So that's how it's able to move at these speeds that are nuts. I mean, they talk, there's stories of Reavers slicing someone's throat at coming through at Mach 3. That because they're that accurate and they're that, you know, specific, they can come through. There's nothing you can do defensively against a Reaver other than put every shot you have into the sky and hope you hit them basically by accident. It is, Reavers are incredible. Haven't had great rules. Cool model, though. As cool as the Reavers are, though, there's a much bigger thing called a Raider.
That's so good.
And I laugh at it, though, because the Reaver is a very sleek bike. Like in the model, the guy's even leaning down, like the way you do if you ever, if anyone ever has ridden crotch rockets, like I have, you actually lean down and kind of put yourself into it on the track. The other one has a sail on it.
It's a pirate ship.
It's a pirate ship with sails on it. And spoiler alert, it's faster.
Also, that sail does nothing, but.
Yeah, it's just, it's there for, yeah. It's a sailboat where all the crew stands on the deck. There's a few like guns also attached to the deck. There's basically no armor on it. And you look at it and go, well, this thing's stupid. And then you see it move. The Raider is one of the fastest vehicles in the galaxy.
Yeah, it also does Tron turns.
Yeah. And yeah, straight line, angled line, they can do anything. They are, like, you can't hit them. That's basically the way to explain a Raider is you try, you see them, sort of, because they're so fast. They try to shoot it, and you just miss.
Well, one of the things they also have is that you're probably going to miss, but they also just have force fields on things. They don't do armor for armor's sake. Like, the Imperium goes,
yeah,
here's a tank. Well, we might have a shield on it, but also let's just make the armor 10 feet thick. The Dark Elder go, you're never going to hit me. Eh, if you do, here's a force shield.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll bounce. What does it deflect? It can deflect anything.
And the Raiders are, the thing I love about the Raiders is, I'm going to complain in like 20 seconds, guys. But anyway, I love the thing about the Raiders is that they also adorn them with like trophies, which is basically dead things from prior raids. The whole concept of the Raider is that it looks not a joke, but it's like it's got this giant sail on it. All the Drukhari are standing on top of it, like pointing at you and shooting at you. And the thing's covered with former victims. And it's designed to make you to just scramble your brain of, oh, my God, I have to kill this thing because what it'll do to me. And but I can't kill it. I keep missing.
But it also has a device on it that makes it that.
Yeah. And it's. Now, I do have an issue with the Raider, and this is more the tabletop, because it's pretty meh. It moves 2 inches faster than a Rhino, 16% faster. The fastest vehicle in the galaxy is 16% faster than a tank with treads on it. And it has the fly rule, which I'm not over. I'm not over them ruining that. It should have it should be able to move halfway across the board on a turn.
It also should treat any intervening as a joke because it flies, but
no minuses to hit. The Rhino is actually tougher than it. A Rhino is a better transport in the tabletop 40K than a Raider.
No, yeah. That, I mean, fly does suck.
this just hurts my soul. This hurts me deep inside.
Hurts me, cut me deep, cut me a little too deep.
Oh, and now we're going to do it again because my actual favorite vehicle in the entire line, and I think I own 12 of them for no good reason.
Hey, these are minus one hit.
It's a Venom. Yeah, they are. The Venom is way more badass. They were decent in 8th and 9th. So the Venom is a tiny transport that's just moves less people than
it's faster.
The Raider.
The funny thing is, in the lore, it's actually slower.
Yeah, that's my point. In the lore, it's slower in the lore and less maneuverable. And in the tabletop, it's faster and more maneuverable. Yeah. It's a cool design. The Harlequins use the exact same design, by the way, for their transports. The reason I love the Venom is I love the lore of the Venom. It's designed to basically rush forward in mass. And so what the Venoms do is they just, if you have, say, like have a mass that infantry they have to deal with, the Venoms just rocket right at them and over top. And they take shots. They have force fields to stop this. The second they cross over the enemy, all the occupants jump out and land in the massed infantry and just begin slaughtering them.
I feel like you're not giving enough backflips here, because that's how I feel everybody.
Oh, there's so many backflips. The one I love about this, though, my favorite story, is that sometimes archons will ride on them solo to go do this, where they're just going to go, cool. And this venom flies over top, and a 5,000-year-old archon lands next to you, armed with the most devastating weapons in the galaxy that are strength 3, and just goes through. I mean, I wrote squad of guardsmen. It's a lot more than one squad.
I'd be very sad if an archon got out and killed one squad of guardsmen. Yeah.
And then that same venom comes right back, and he jumps into the air, back into the venom, goes off to do it again if needed. Yeah. I love venoms. I mean, at least, to Brad's point, they're at least minus one to hit in the game.
They do have the rule to get back in them now. So, they approach something.
Nope.
or no.
Nope. I'm just saying, nope.
Really have to go back to poison.
Yeah. Brad is genuinely rubbing his face right now, because we're going to talk about something that we love reading the stories about, and then you think about it on the tabletop, and it makes no damn sense. So, the Drukharis use a lot of toxins on the battlefront. And I'm sure some of our older listeners are really grinning right now, knowing what I'm about to do. We'll deal with witches and homunculi in the next cast. They also have combat chemicals, etc.
But those make more sense.
Yeah, we're about to try and make Brad's head explode. So let's have some fun. Drukhari have really all the same weaponry for the most part that the Eldar have. Dark lances are bright lances. Disintegrator cannons are star cannons. Shredders are death spinners. It's really basically the same thing, except for splinter.
I was going to say, except for their number one weapon, the most populous weapon is splinter weapons, which shoot trash.
They shoot little crystals that are made of neurotoxins. And the idea is that
they shoot darts at you, basically. Yeah,
it's a dart gun. It's a really, really cool dart gun.
It should work on half the galaxy. Half.
I mean, okay. So the neurotoxin does turn your blood and organs into acid. Let's do the cool bit first. The cool bit is that the splinter weapons are designed to not just kill their opponent, but to actually make the opponent die in absolute agony.
So they can get power from them.
The Eldar really, the Drukhari feed off this. So it's really a great weapon.
And it's a real thing, though. This isn't just a... We're dicks. They are dicks. But they actually are physically getting faster, better, stronger from this suffering. So this is a real thing.
Not in 10th edition.
In the lore and every other edition, as the game went on, as you killed people, they would just get faster, more powerful. Yeah. So they're actually quicker, more effective, more accurate. And that it makes sense for these weapons, because you're like, why wouldn't you just shoot them with a dark lance in the face? Because the dark lance gave me 0.1.
Yeah, and this gives me 1,000.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Well, there's an issue here, though. Hey, Brad, do these toxins work on everybody?
Oh, my God. I'm...
So, as we said in the Space Marine cast, they have 3 organs and a power armor that are all designed to combat poison and wounds. An Imperial Guardsman, on the other side, has flak armor,
maybe
sometimes, and litanies. And the Drukhari poison is equally effective.
Wounds them in exactly the same way.
Also,
on the board, same roll on the die.
Also a custode, a sister.
Yes.
And my favorite one, a Necron warrior.
Yes, you poison the Necron
warrior. Oh, and a demon, too. Necron warriors, a blue horror also goes down.
Now, I'm gonna pause on this and go, when we get into the homunculi and stuff like that, some of the stories have a reason, because they make poison specifically for certain things. Like if you shot a Necron, they have a thing that disrupts their neural network or whatever.
Poxwalkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Works on typhus. Just for the record, it works on typhus.
Yeah, he would be like, Ooh, nice.
Yeah, Typhus, just take it. Like, give me that gun. Typhus should get shot with a splinter weapon and then start chasing the Drukhari yelling, gimme, gimme, gimme.
That was awesome. What blend is that?
Here's something controversial for people who've been playing the game. Up until 10th edition, Drukhari were the scourge of Tyranid players. Because the poison weapons worked on anything with infantry beast or monster keyword. And it would work on a Carnifex, which is a giant biologic monster. It would also, by the way, work on Primarchs. And I'm sorry, that's what it should do. It shouldn't work on a Tau battle suit. That's why they changed it, because in 8th edition, I could shoot a Tau battle suit and wound it on a 3. The poison ones. But
anything that's biological, anything you can basically get to skin, though.
Yeah, but it didn't make as much sense on, like, you know, some of them. But things like, this drove me nuts, because I do think, and this was what made playing Drukhari kind of fun in tournaments back then, was if you pulled a Tyranid player, they were miserable, because it's like, oh, so you wound my entire army on 3s or 4s.
Well, some of them are 2s, depending on the weapon.
Yeah, so if you're running, was it Poison Tongue? You get the +1 to wound?
Yeah.
Oh. And so the GW overcorrected this because people got upset about it, and I just think it's a mistake. I'm going to call it out.
It was more, had more lore. They had lore friendly.
Yeah, I mean.
Flavor.
Yeah, I mean, although there were some, like, to me, you can't do the same where the game's too complicated, but I do think, like, a penitent engine. Well, if I shoot the main person and dissolve their blood into acid, I should wound it, you know, more easily.
Yep.
Dreadnoughts are a little bit trickier. Skitari or some question marks on it. But I also think I think the flip side is that when they shoot a robot, it should do nothing.
They used to. That was the old.
Yeah, I know.
The old rules were better because you just went, hey, I'm shooting the tank. You know what your weapon does against me? It can't hurt me.
It does nothing. It
legitimately, they also, you couldn't wound double your toughness.
Yeah.
So back your or you know armor values. Yeah. So like you show up with
a I'm not gonna let you say armor values were a good thing. Nope.
No, I'm not saying armor. I'm saying it was a thing you couldn't hurt it.
Yeah.
So like double toughness you couldn't hurt, and also these, because all these poison weapons were strength 2.
Yeah. Now the cool one though is when they shoot Space Marines, they just go down. You have no idea.
Doesn't matter which concoction you shoot at them, they just die.
It was not even a real concoction. It's just like we were low on stuff and we just put some bleach in there.
Bleach, and my nephew had chicken pox.
Yeah. it's firing bad oysters, like New Orleans style. This'll just watch. It'll drop them. Yeah, and it is the it's an issue. I'll be honest when we talk about this, because it's not the poison weapons spread up beyond just a splinter. But yeah.
I'm so angry at this.
But on the raid.
Why did we have to end with this?
Because this is the best part. It's the funniest part of the whole thing. I had to shove it in there somewhere that, yeah, we had to talk about.
Goddamn poison.
Yeah. But it made sense. I mean, to Brad's point, that where the poison weapons make sense is that the raid has kind of three elements to it. One is the final piece for the souls you're taking back. But before you take them back, you have to you need to create agony while you're there. And that's the fear of the raid. It's why they're moving so quickly all over the place. It's that creates, because even just the fear of a population feeds the Drukhari.
That's why you get picked.
But these splinter weapons are also a key one, because you can't take a regiment of guardsmen back with you because they won't surrender, especially if it's like Krieg. Like, so the only way to get power from fighting Krieg
Didn't do justice to them. We'll do it more when we talk about the coven, but like, they do create specific poisons that just paralyze you.
Yeah, they also have
things of that nature.
But the whole point of these weapons, of the splinter weapons, is that I'm going to, as a Drukhari, I'm maximizing the raid. I'm getting my final resources. At the onset of the raid, I'm getting a bunch of power as these people fear me. But also as I kill with my splinter weapons, the agony of their death and them screaming with their death actually creates energy and power that I can then feed off of. That's, again, we don't love it. I'm actually with Brad. Like, yeah, they shouldn't wound Necrons. There's some mistakes in the rules,
but the concept is cool.
Yeah.
Well, they can also only stay in real space for so long. They are already...
Because Slaanesh starts pulling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we should have mentioned that. Sorry. Our bad, guys. We should have mentioned that. When they come into the real space, Slaanesh knows they're there and the sap on their souls increases.
Like by a lot.
Yeah.
So that's power of 10, probably.
So they have to, and that's why, again, why Splinter Weapon is so important. They have to make it pure agony while they're in the real space.
Yeah, you're withering. You're seeing your soul.
Yeah, go
your
that way.
Silver cord of their
astral. You got to feed the way in. And so these raids, you know, that's why all these weapons, all this speed, it all comes down to that combination of the raid has to create pain, discomfort, and torture.
Terror.
But it also has to conclude as quickly as it begins. We have to get back out of here and back. So
yeah, there isn't long sieges that involve Dark Eldar.
And actually, to that point, they'll bail pretty quickly. If we should have said this, so we'll say it now. If you engage in a raid and you miscalculated or whatever happened, let's say the Space Marines show up, you're out. Everyone goes back. You're going to murder the Archon, whose idea it was, obviously.
Well,
but you are not. It's never worth it to them. So with that, we'll let Brad go calm down.
I'm so mad about poison.
Yeah, it's great. Next week, we're going to jump into witches, covens, and what I'll call mercenaries. Some of the key parts of the Drukhari. I actually like the mercenaries.
They're probably the coolest units, to be honest.
Best looking units and best lore.
Mandrakes are the best lore.
Mandrakes are the best thing in the whole.
Lore-wise, yes.
Yeah, the tabletop.
Yeah. Mm. They're finally not the worst, though.
Yeah, they are.
They spent seven editions being the worst thing in the book.
Yeah, they're technically playable right now.
Yeah.
But they were always the best model. And already you saw them on the board. It's because someone was like, yeah, look, I know they suck, but I love them so much. So we wanted to do it in this order, by the way, guys, where we're kind of doing the Cabals and the real space raid. It's a time thing. These casts can get really, really long. We didn't want to do a 2.5-hour cast, all but a 30-minute cast. So that's why we broke it up the way we did. It also helps us talk a bit more about the witches and the covens having established, you know, real space raids. So anyway, next cast is going to get a little bit messed up as we talk about covens, because so get excited. Till then, though, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.